There are a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL draft this year. My name is Danny Kelly, and I host the Ringer NFL Draft Show with Danny Heifetz, Ben Solak, and Craig Vorlbeck. We cover trades, free agency, and the draft, obviously. We'll tell you about everything, including which quarterbacks are good, which quarterbacks are not as good, and which quarterbacks are just Kirk Cousins. Search the Ringer NFL Draft Show on Spotify.
It's Off the Pike, presented by FanDuel. April showers bring a loaded sports calendar, and FanDuel is the place to bet on it all. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting on the Explore page and the Pulse and get paid instantly when you win. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available and listen to the end of this episode for additional details. Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com.
This episode is brought to you by Jiffy Lube. Cars can be a big investment, so it's important to take care of them. I once got a car that I started out with 25,000 miles on. I got it to over 200,000 miles because I took care of it. You know how you take care of a car? You take care of the maintenance, the oil, the brakes, all that stuff. And if you don't, you can have a car just completely fall apart. When your car needs maintenance, head to Jiffy Lube. They provide automotive excellence at speed. Get your oil changed, brakes checked, tons of other multi-care services. It's all done by expertly trained technicians who actually care about taking care of you and your car. Jiffy Lube, car more. To find coupons and start an instant online estimate, visit JiffyLube.com.
Welcome into Off the Pike. I'm Brian Barrett. We are recording after the Patriots drafted Drake May 3rd overall. It happened. It finally happened, people. We were nervous. Could they actually trade back? Would they actually take J.J. McCarthy instead of Drake May? Wait, could Washington have been playing a trick on us the whole time and they would actually take Drake May at number 2 instead of Jaden Daniels? No, it happened. The Patriots have their new quarterback. It is Drake May. I am so fired up. I had been nervous over the past 48 hours or so. This is the guy, as you all know, that I've wanted for a long time. I am very happy. I may do what Jamie does and get the North Carolina Drake May jersey just because I think the color is cool, even though they play in the same conference as the school I went to. But nonetheless, I'm so hyped up right now that Drake May is the new quarterback of the New England Patriots. There is hope. This is really the first thing I have felt good about this offseason as it pertains to the New England Patriots. We have had this bizarre craft offseason, right? And look, Michael Onwenu's back. I get it. Kendrick Bourne is back. Josh Uche is back. And I like all those guys, right? But we're not throwing a parade for those guys. They were part of a horrible football team last year. And that's not to say they're not good players, because they are good players. But you get my point. Not super excited about all that. Besides Kendrick Bourne, that's sort of my guy. You get the point, though. You're not like, hey, they got Kendrick Bourne on Onwenu and all these guys are coming back. They were on the team. I'm not super fired up about that. And even Jerod Mayo. I hope he's a great coach, but his offseason has been sort of weird. Wouldn't we agree on that? He had to walk back his burn the cash comments earlier this offseason, and you had this whole smear campaign of Bill Belichick from the Crafts that was confirmed basically by Seth Wickersham in the article that they had in ESPN, where Kraft called up Arthur Blank and said, hey, don't trust Bill. So it's just been a really tough offseason from a Patriots perspective. And I know I may sound spoiled as a Patriots fan, 6 Super Bowls, right? And most fan bases go through a downturn at some point during the franchise's tenure, of course. And me, as somebody that has never seen the Patriots be bad until this recent history, right? I've been alive the whole time I've been watching the Patriots. They've been good with Tom Brady, right? I don't remember really the Bledsoe era. I was too young. But ever since I have been like a fan of the organization, they have been good. So yes, I do sound spoiled, but I'm happy about this because it has not been good over the past couple of years, whether it's Patricia calling plays, whether it's, hey, we got this brief moment where we thought Mac Jones was the guy and then he fell flat on his face and he was atrocious. And then they tried the whole Zappy thing. That didn't work, right? And I will say this, I don't give the Patriots a ton of credit for this, right? Because this was the obvious thing to do. This was what most of us, and I won't speak for all Patriots fans, but most of us, I would say the majority of Patriots fans wanted a quarterback at number three. And of that majority, the majority of that majority wanted Drake May like I wanted Drake May. So it wasn't as if the Patriots, oh my God, this is an unbelievable pick. No, this was the pick. This is the guy they should take. So I'm not giving them a ton of credit, but they did the right thing. And there was at least some worry that I had that would they fuck this up? Would they screw it up? No, they took the right guy. And now going forward, you feel like, okay, at least you have something to look forward to with this Patriots organization. You may have found the next great Patriots quarterback, right? And remember, we were even stressed out last year. Remember when they won the Denver game on Christmas Eve? We're thinking, oh no, are they not going to get a quarterback? And they survived all that, and here we go. Drake May is now the quarterback of the New England Patriots. And I will say this. I believe that you had a team in front of you do you a favor in the Washington Commanders. Jaden Daniels, of course, as we all know by now, goes to Washington. And I believe that Drake May, as you all know how I feel, is the superior player. What this almost reminds me of, it's not an apples to apples comparison, but to me, it does make a lot of sense. This reminds me of the Celtics getting Tatum at number three over Lonzo. Now, the Celtics, of course, traded back in that situation and got assets. What Danny Ainge did took a lot more balls than what Elliott Wolfe and Jerod Mayo did, right? But we knew that Philly wanted Fultz, right? And Danny didn't want Fultz. Obviously, he would be proven correct on that. And we knew that the Lakers wanted Lonzo Ball. And ironically, Magic is part of the Washington Commanders organization now, and he was part of the Lakers when, of course, he made that pick. So, but remember with Lonzo, it was like, well, he could be great. He's an awesome passer, but his shot kind of looks broken. Now, he would improve that later on in his career. Of course, now he's dealing with all these injuries, but he had a major flaw. We didn't know if he could be an elite scorer at the NBA level. And you had to really go back to Jason Kidd. Now, at the end of Jason Kidd's career, he turned out to be a really good three-point shooter. But early on in his prime years, he wasn't a great three-point shooter. Remember, at one point, they called him Asin because he didn't have a J, right? Now, all-time great player. Love Jason Kidd as a player. He was unbelievable, right? But you get the point. It was like, okay, Lonzo could be good, but he wasn't really where the league was going, right? The league was, at that particular point in time, emphasizing shooting all over the place. And you didn't have a lot of examples in recent NBA history of a guy like Lonzo that was not a great shooter and that was a point guard, a passer, a bigger point guard that wasn't really a great scorer, right? We haven't had recent history of that. Even if you look at the elite point guards at that particular point in time, for example, even though I'm not the biggest fan of this guy, but Russell Westbrook, right? That guy was going to score for you, and Lonzo really wasn't that guy. So what the Lakers were doing at that time, they were drafting based on an example from a previous generation. And part of it was the star power of Lonzo from California, played at UCLA. But also, like, you were wondering, so you think this guy can be like Jason Kidd and be a dominant player? That was something that was in a previous generation, and you really only had one recent example of that prototype of player, right? And with Tatum, Philly and the Lakers, right, they overthought things when they saw Jason Tatum, right? Because the league at that time was trending towards the best players were elite wings that could score. So remember when Jason Tatum was drafted in 2017, think about the best players in the league at that point in time. Yes, you had Westbrook and Harden that could score from the guard position, and Westbrook had won an MVP, the triple doubles, but remember, and Steph Curry, of course, but Steph Curry, again, one of one. But look at these other guys, like the guys that were running the league, LeBron, Kawhi, Durant, Paul George to a lesser extent, made it to a bunch of conference finals with Indiana, Jimmy Butler, right? Tatum was the prototype of the direction the league was going. 6'7 to 6'10, guys that could flat out fill it up. Tatum's critique, or the critique on Tatum, was what? Hey, he's too comfortable taking bad shots. Well, the bigger point of that should have been, well, he can hit those shots. Like, he can get those shots off, and he can hit them. That should have been the takeaway, right? Because we see what all these other premier forwards in the league are doing, right? So the Lakers were reaching for an idea of someone that we have not seen many examples in recent NBA history that had success, right? We haven't seen a lot of guys like Jason Kidd, right? We just haven't seen it, that That was the hope, what Lonzo could be, right? And now when you look at Jaden Daniels, we're looking at one example, right? We're looking at basically the only guy that plays similar to the way that Jaden Daniels plays is Lamar Jackson. One guy, that's it. In the entire NFL, that's the only guy. And even to a lesser extent, you could look at a guy like, for example, Jalen Hurts. Remember, Jalen Hurts was not nearly as good this past season as he was 2 years ago, and we're wondering, how good is Jalen Hurts? I think he's a good player, but not on the Lamar Jackson level. And I know he made it to a Super Bowl, but it really wasn't because of him, right? It was because of the team around him. So I just look at it and say no other quarterback in the league is as dependent on his legs and is consistently performing at a high level other than Lamar. Jaden Daniels basically has to be like Lamar Jackson, right? Like that's the way to succeed. Just like with Lonzo, is like he's got to be Jason Kidd. Jaden Daniels has to be Lamar Jackson for this to work because he's not just a prototypical pocket passer. He needs that running element. So he has to be Lamar Jackson for this to work. That's one example. So Washington is drafting the guy on one recent example. With Drake May, he liked Tatum. Tatum fit the prototype of all these forwards that we've seen, the LeBrons, the Durants, etc., the guys we went through. With Drake May, he fits the new prototype. First of all, he has the size, unlike Daniels. Now, Daniels has the height. He's 6'4", but when you look at Drake May, he's 223 pounds, right? And he's going to get even bigger. He's 6'4" and 3/8". That's in the 83rd percentile. He is a moose. And then there's the skill set, the massive arm, can throw on the run, can throw off platform, and can run at need be. When he needs to run, he can run. Not like Jaden Daniels, where his game has to be a revolving around his running ability, right? You think about the guys that are the best quarterbacks in the league right now, or at least a bunch of them. Josh Allen, Pat Mahomes, Justin Herbert, CJ Stroud. Even Joe Burrow is outstanding at extending plays, something that Drake May can do, right? Joe Burrow got it 2 years ago because he was hurt this past season. Passer rating, more than 2.5 seconds in the pocket, was 106.5, which was right in front of Pat Mahomes, fourth best in the NFL. And his completion percentage after 2.5 seconds was 66.2%, which ranked first in the NFL. So Joe Burrow, even if we don't think he's the same athlete as Allen, Mahomes, and Herbert, or CJ Stroud, he's still really good at this new skill set, which is the ability to extend plays and the ability to throw on the run. This is who Drake May is, right? If you even look back at Mac Jones, the last quarterback the Patriots took in the first round, he was an old archetype where it's like the hope was, could he be Brady or Manning? And we just don't really see these dominant pocket passers anymore. There is some traditional pocket passers, right? Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, but those guys, and especially with Jared Goff, he flamed out in LA. He was good, and then they said, we need to upgrade. We need somebody more like the modern quarterback, Matt Stafford, who can throw on the run. Now, Goff's a good player when he plays with all these guys, the Sam Laportas, the St. Browns, these really talented teams, and an unbelievable offensive line. Yeah, sure, it can work, but you can't just put him anywhere like you can put these other quarterbacks in different situations, right? And then you look at May, where clearly there is a chance it won't work, right? There is a risk. Any pick, there is some sort of a risk. But with the Celtics, like Jason Tatum, they're drafting the current prototype of the best players in the league. Drake May is of that prototype. Jaden Daniels is not. Jaden Daniels, you are drafting hoping he is one guy, and that's Lamar Jackson. Drake May, you're looking, there's similarities with Herbert. There's similarities with Josh Allen. There's similarities with Pat Mahomes. And again, I'm not saying he's any of those guys or guaranteeing it, but what the Patriots did here, and part of it is the Commanders did them a favor, at least that's how I feel, that the Commanders did them a favor here, where the Commanders essentially drafted Lonzo, the Patriots drafted Tatum. And I'm not saying the careers are going to mirror each other or anything along those lines. I'm just pointing it out. You can see the similarities where we have seen recent history, players like Jason Tatum work. We hadn't really seen history of players like Lonzo Ball working. We've seen one player in recent history that plays like Jaden Daniels. We have seen a bunch of players in recent history, in fact, the best quarterbacks in the league, that play like Drake May. Okay? Now, because you have one of these super talented guys, you can still screw it up. Like, for example, the Chargers front office, they've been screwing it up, and they need to hire a new coaching staff. And we'll see if Jim Harbaugh can get that thing back on track. But the reason Jim Harbaugh, who is considered one of the best football coaches in the world, just won the national championship, the reason he is coaching the Chargers is, yes, you could say, oh, he's got these issues with the NCAA, sure, but the main reason he took the Chargers job is because they have a franchise quarterback in Justin Herbert, still young enough where they can turn that organization around because they have the guy. And Harbaugh's trying to get that fixed, right? And he had some really bad coordinators in there, not Kellen Moore, but Joe Lombardi before that, right? So they did a poor job, right? So the Patriots could easily fuck this up, even if Drake May turns out to be a great player. But you think about it too, they had Brandon Staley coaching, who was absolutely atrocious. But, so I look at the Patriots and I say, yes, they have a lot more work to do, including the rest of the draft year, right? And maybe they decide to swing a trade at some point in time. But this is the first piece that makes everything work. And I'm just so happy that this is the guy. And by the way, I loved him. All his interviews, he seems super excited. And I like, oh, Brian, he's super excited. Yes, I just like the personality, man. I thought he had great personality on the stage in the interviews prior to the draft. And then hearing him speak after he was drafted, I thought he did a really nice job. I really did. And I'm so excited. And I feel like we've seen this type of player work. That's my thing. We have seen this work. That's why I'm super excited. Okay. Now, some of the things that Drake May said, he said, quote, I'm competing to win, and that's what Patriots Nation is all about, and that's what they know how to do, and I'm ready to come in and do that. Let's go. About the starting job, my job is to go in there and earn the guy's respect. He actually has a relationship. He knows Jacoby Brissett through Sam Howell, who, of course, played at North Carolina, so he knows Jacoby Brissett a little bit. He also said he's stoked, which I love. He's stoked. Let's go. By the way, Andrew Callahan, our buddy from the Herald, he tweeted that the Patriots did not believe May was well-positioned or protected in UNC's new offense last year, and he knocked his interviews with the team brass out of the park. I told you, he was playing in a bad system. He was playing for a bad coaching staff. That's why, like, people were overthinking it. People were overthinking it. I get there's work to be done, the footwork, etc., but the talent is there. We also got the note from Callahan that Elliot Wolf would like to add more picks. So you do have to ask yourself, as Callahan noted, does that mean they'll actually move the 34th pick? I hope not. I want them to get weapons for Drake May. But anyway, Mayo said, we aren't sitting here saying Drake is out here as our starting quarterback. He understands that. He understands the things he has to get better. And with coaching and hard work and the coaches, we have the support system from ownership. I think he has a chance to go out there and play at a high level. May, on the fact that he may not be the starter, says, I think my first thing is finding any way I can contribute. I'm prepared and ready to be the starter. Love that he said that. But at the same time, as a young guy coming in there, it's not given to you. So he says, yeah, I think I'm ready to be the starter. I know I'm ready to be the starter, but I understand that it may not happen right away. And he's cool with that too. So I love everything that Drake May said. Seems like a really fiery competitor. He was at one point during the draft, he said, I've lived in North Carolina my whole life. I'm ready to live somewhere else. It's kind of ironic. My brother lived in Massachusetts his whole life. Now he lives in North Carolina. But anyway, that's total digression. But I'm excited. I am really excited. Now, Bill Belichick, who was on the Pat McAfee simulcast, if you will, of the draft. Belichick had some unreal lines. I'll get into those in a little bit. But Belichick said, Drake compares himself a lot to Josh Allen. We'll see about that. I think there are some comparisons with the size and athleticism, but Josh Allen is a pretty special player. A very talented kid, good size, runs well, has a good arm, just hasn't played very much. He really doesn't have a lot of experience. He makes some big plays. He's going to need some work in reading defenses, reading coverages. Okay, so, and if you heard Bill talk about J.J. McCarthy, you could tell that he really likes J.J. McCarthy. I do wonder who Belichick would have taken with that number 3 overall pick. He didn't feel like he was the biggest fan of Drake. Man, you can understand that. Bill wants somebody that's going to play on schedule, right? He doesn't want somebody improvising, but I love the pick. I really do. And by the way, Belichick on that simulcast was hilarious. He loves IMG Academy, of course, one of the premier, not just for football, but for all sports. I mean, they have a great basketball team and all that. Mount Verd is Cooper Flagg School, and they've been like a powerhouse. But IMG Academy is really good. So he kept referencing all the guys that were drafted by IMG Academy. At one point, they had this mentalist on. That guy is everywhere. I'm like over that mentalist guy. And I know like he wrote down all the picks or something. But remember, he was on Hard Knocks with the Jets. He's all over the place. Now, I've seen this guy a million times. I've had enough of him. Bill was ignoring him and trying to figure out who the next pick was. And then he was like impressed with what he ended up doing. So Bill was hilarious. He also kept saying, oh my God, yeah. He said that like 8 times during the broadcast. And at one point they were talking about, I forget which lineman it was that was drafted, and he said he takes up the whole room or something along those lines. Bill was pumped with the pick of one of the linemen. I do remember that. So I thought Bill was really good on TV. It's pretty funny, too. They had Aaron Rodgers on, which was an interesting back and forth, too. I thought that was funny. This is another thing Belichick related during the draft. The Atlanta Falcons, this is where the draft started to get drunk. The Atlanta Falcons took Michael Penix at 9. Nobody thought Penix was going to be selected, of course, before J.J. McCarthy. So he goes 9. He turns 24 next month. He is a month older than Zion Williamson, who was the number one pick in the 2019 draft. Michael Penix just went 9th in the 2024 NFL draft. And the big thing here is the people within the Atlanta front office, remember, none of them had Bill Belichick as a finalist for their coaching job. Well, this organization that Bill wasn't good enough for, they just signed Kirk Cousins, okay? They just signed an old quarterback, and they drafted a guy 9th overall that is the second oldest quarterback in the class behind Bo Nix. What the hell is their plan, right? By the way, Jane Slater from the NFL Network said that Kirk Cousins was shocked and disappointed, and they never told him anything about the fact that they would be drafting a quarterback. Daniel Jeremiah on the NFL Network said, I just reached out to his agent, Mike McCartney. He was not given a heads up. So these guys, they're so smart that, hey, none of them wanted Belichick to coach the team. None of them had Belichick in the top three. They did this shit. They drafted a guy that's going to be 24 with the 9th overall pick when Kirk Cousins is there. And to me, it's not, I know I keep pointing out the age here. It's more of like, what are you doing? You have the 9th overall pick. You just got a veteran quarterback. You're trying to win now, and you get a quarterback that doesn't have near the upside as some of the other guys in the draft. Like, okay, like J.J. McCarthy would have made more sense there, and I get it. They just love Michael Penix, but what's the plan there? It's an idiotic plan. You're all in. You have Kirk Cousins right now. You're trying to win a bad division, and they do that, and Bill wasn't good enough to coach there. Give me a break. All right, the one thing I will say, though, with Drake Bay that is slightly disappointing and maybe a little bit worrisome for Patriots fans is if you look at the rest of these guys, you look at Caleb Williams, and the Bears have been a dumpster fire of an organization, but they traded for Keenan Allen, elite wide receiver. You know how I felt about that. I would have done it for 1 year. DJ Moore, legitimate bona fide number one receiver, and they just drafted Rome Odunze, who's an absolute stud. So they have three receivers better than anybody on this Patriots team. J.J. McCarthy, he gets the opportunity to go to Minnesota. Justin Jefferson, arguably the best receiver in the NFL, and they have Jordan Addison. Even if you look at Jaden Daniels, he goes to Washington. Terry McLaurin is better than any receiver the Patriots have, right? So I just look at these situations and you think about it in terms of, it was interesting, Bill Belichick mentioned on the McAfee simulcast that you start the rookie when he's ready. But the big thing is you can't go back. So if you start Drake May and the offensive line stinks and the weapons are what the weapons are right now, he may really stink it up for the first couple of weeks because he's working at a massive disadvantage. And then you can't go back on that, though. That's the point that Bill made. So if Drake May is not ready right away and you're concerned about sort of the players around him, then you have to have him sit at the beginning of the season. Everybody's different, though. Some guys are better learning on the job. Some guys can sit out and they're better that way. I know by the time we get closer to the season, I'm not going to be able to contain my wanting to watch Drake May to the point where I'm saying, Drake May should start. But I will understand it. And it was interesting to read those quotes from, or hear those quotes, I should say, from Mayo and hearing from Drake May. But I'm excited, man. They got the guy. This is the guy that I've wanted for so long. I'm excited. I'm finally excited about Patriots football again. All right, a lot more to get into. I do want to get to a couple of calls we had from the Celtics Heat game. And we'll bring in producer extraordinaire Jamie McClellan as well.
This NBA playoffs, FanDuel is giving all customers two chances to bring home a big win with a no-sweat same-game parlay every weekend of the playoffs. Just place a SGP on any playoff matchup, and you'll get bonus bets back if you don't win. Bet on everything from rebounds to assists to three-pointers and more. All right, now I'm looking at this Celtics Heat game, of course, game three of this series as it heads back to Miami on Saturday night. I like Derek White over 11.5 points. They need to get him going. He was not involved enough for my liking in that game on Wednesday. I also like Jaylen to go over 21.5. And FanDuel is now live in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. Visit FanDuel.com/pike and shoot your shot on America's number one sportsbook. FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 plus, 18 plus in D.C. and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. Opt-in required. Minimum three-leg parlay required. Refund issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days after receipt. Max refund $5 unless otherwise specified. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome back into Off the Pike. We are celebrating here tonight after the Patriots draft Drake May. We did have a rough night on Wednesday, though, after the Celtics lost to the Heat. I know you guys are fired up about that, so let's get to a couple of calls. The number is 617-396-7172. Who's up first?
Hi, Brian. This is Lorenzo from Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm just calling to say that I turned the Celtics game off at halftime. I want to say that I saw what I needed to see, considering it's the same stuff that I've been seeing from the Celtics core for the past 4 years. Just coming into the game looking disinterested and casual, as if the win was pretty much a guarantee. Just lacking effort on defense, not rotating on guys, leaving shooters open. And then on offense, just kind of playing at half speed, it looked like. Just really, really disappointing. I think they played better in the second half, and from what I hear, they played better in the rest of the game, but not enough to win the game, and I think that's just because they started off on the wrong foot. Yeah, the Heat had an historic shooting night, I get that, but when it's the same type of story that I've seen from this Celtics squad in the past, it's just a little disappointing and a little worrisome. My question to you is, how do you think the Celtics coaching staff handle this type of loss? Do they just kind of say, hey, you know, Heat were on fire, they weren't missing, let's move on? Or do you think they try to use it as an example of what not to do in these playoffs, especially considering that a lot of the other contenders are already 2-0 and don't seem to be having any issues round one? Love the pod. Let me know what you think. Thanks.
So it's a really interesting point or a question about how the coaching staff will handle this. And by the way, good for you that you went to bed at halftime, because the third quarter got worse. The third quarter to me was the most disappointing part of the game, where the Celtics allowed that Miami team to go on a 22-9 run to start the third quarter. So if you thought they played bad in the first half, they played a lot worse in that third quarter. They fought a bit, but they played worse. But I want to get to the question you posed about how is the coaching staff going to react to this? Because it's interesting to me. I fear that it's going to be a similar game plan. And what do I mean by that? So I referenced on the pod after the game that Joe thought most of the closeouts were good, and he talked about that on Thursday as well. He thought most of them were good. Here's the thing that stuck out to me. If you look at to do a little metric man breakdown here, if you look at the Heat, game shooting 50% or better from three-point territory this regular season, you know how many times the Heat did that? 5 times in 82 games. The last two postseasons against the Celtics, it happened 4 times in 9 games. So 5 times all this season in 82 games. The last 9 playoff games they've played against the Celtics, they've shot 50% or better 4 times. And if you look at the Heat on wide open threes, okay, that means the closest defender is at least 6 feet away. The Heat in that game were 15 of 23. They got 23 attempts of wide open threes where a defender was nowhere near them. Tyler Hero was 5 of 6. Highsmith was 3 of 4. Martin was 3 of 3. In the regular season, these guys shot really well on open threes, like most NBA players do. Highsmith 40%, Hero 49.6%, Martin 39.4%, Robinson 44.4%. So if you look at it on the season, the Pacers generate the most wide open threes per game at 23.1. The Heat took 23 in that game on Wednesday night. The Heat hit 41.3% of their wide open threes on the season, which was the second best. By the way, Martin last year in the playoff series against the Celtics hit 56.5% of his wide open threes. It was 23 attempts. So this is the fear that I have with Mazzulla and what the game plan is. They're basically saying, and we referred to the other night, the fact that the Celtics will give up some above the break threes. The Celtics are playing the math game, the percentages against Miami. And what irritates me about this, at some point, you have to drop the math and you just have to play the game and realize you can't just play the numbers all the time. And this is coming from somebody like me, the metric man, that enjoys the numbers. But at some point, you have to play the game that's on the court. Because right now, what we're seeing, by these numbers that I told you, when this has only happened five times in the course of a whole regular season, shooting 50% from three, and they've done it in four of the last nine playoff games, what does that tell you? They are very comfortable playing the Celtics because they are getting these wide open opportunities from three-point territory. Look at Caleb Martin, 21 or more points. Last nine playoff games against the Celtics, he's done it four times. Last two seasons, regular seasons, 135 games four times. So nine times against the Celtics in the postseason, he's done it four times. Last two regular seasons, four times. How about Caleb Martin, four or more made threes? Last two regular seasons, he did it seven times. Again, 135 games. Last two postseasons against the Celtics, he's done it four times. These guys are way too comfortable, okay? So whatever the perception was or whatever the idea was of what Miami is offensively, the Celtics game plan is not working. You may think this is the right thing to do, and this is the one thing where sometimes Mazzulla can overthink things, is sometimes he can be so into his numbers that he's just going to be stubborn and say, no, we're going to continue to play this way. And the reality is this. You can get into these Heat guys, especially considering that they don't have Butler. You can get into those guys, press up on them, play more tough on-ball defense, right? That's how you should be playing this team, rather than saying, oh, we're okay with this guy taking a three. We're okay with that guy taking a three, right? That, to me, is just not a good game plan. Just play the game. Don't play the percentages. That, to me, is the biggest problem. And that's why I have a concern, because I do worry, are they going to play in a similar way? Now, part of it, it's not all on Mazzulla. Like, some of the closeouts are just bad. And especially at the end of the game, there was just a couple of really bad closeouts in that game. We can all acknowledge that. But to me, the big thing here is, how are they going to change their game plan? Or is it going to stay the same? That, and I fear it's going to stay the same, because this is how it was the entire playoff series against Miami last year. So that's my biggest fear, is to answer your question, that they don't change up what they're doing. And when you do that, you're playing too much with variance. The Celtics are the bigger, more athletic team. They have so many good defenders, and we're talking about Drew, Derek White, Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum. They should be able to shut these guys down. You don't have to rely on, oh, these guys aren't great shooters. The numbers have told us in the last nine playoff games against the Heat, they're going to shoot the ball well. They feel very, very comfortable. So when a team feels very comfortable, you need to change things up, just like Miami did, where they played a lot of that zone in the first game. The Celtics destroyed it. No more zone. We're just going to a switching scheme. They made the Celtics uncomfortable, okay? You need to make the Heat uncomfortable the way you've been doing it for the last nine playoff games. They are incredibly comfortable, so they need to change their approach. All right, who's up next?
Ryan, it's David from Kentucky. The Celtics fall 111-101 to the Miami Heat at home. Here's the truth. Tatum and Brown both, I thought, played pretty well. Eric Spoelstra is the best coach in basketball, and maybe one of the best, if not the best, basketball coaches ever. The concerns I have about this team, about this roster, about this iteration of the Celtics team, going back to 2017, up on the Cavs, and Terry Rozier misses like 12 shots in a row, and since, is that we're front runners. That when things are going well, we're winners, and the second they don't, we're losers. I think you look at the Warriors series. I think you look at the Heat last year. That other than like Bucks game six, 2 years ago, maybe game seven of the Philly series last year, when we get punched in the mouth, we just quit. And Miami is tougher than us. And 2 years ago, the Warriors were tougher than us. And on and on and on. And does this change? Is there evidence or is there history that indicates a team can change? Or 7 years into this, is this just who the Tatum Brown Celtics in, and we just have to hope they get hot and can ride an easy road to the finals? Because this was supposed to be the easy road to the finals, at least. And we just lost at home in game two to the eighth seed. So Anyway, love the show. Look forward to hearing what you guys say about it. And as always, go Seas, and hopefully the Bees hold on to this game here too. So, we'll talk soon.
Okay. And by the way, the Bees did hold on to that game. I'm sure that he called in right after the game the other night. But with the front running thing, I'm with you, man. And look, this is coming from somebody that still thinks the Celtics are going to win the Eastern Conference, because there's going to be games. And my prediction is that Saturday night, the Celtics are going to win. I may look like an idiot for this, but I think the Celtics are going to win comfortably on Saturday. And then they're really going to be challenged on Monday. That's what I think is going to happen. I think they're really going to respond to the loss. And then Monday is going to be the real challenge, right? But I agree with you, where we've seen so many teams in the past where they're down and they fight back. I'm not saying the Celtics just quit, right? I wouldn't go that far. But they don't have it in them where the game gets grimy, right? Because the Celtics haven't played in a ton of these games this season where it gets grimy and they come back. Usually those games that get grimy against good competition, whether it was Minnesota early in the season, whether it was OKC, whether it was Denver, when these games get grimy and the Celtics have to sort of, at times, work from behind and work out of a hole, they don't perform well, okay? And that's, Denver does, right? Other teams have. To your point, Golden State, when they won the championship, they will come back, and Golden State did it throughout that run. The Celtics haven't proven that, right? And I do think this year, it's been a situation where they haven't really, in terms of on-court adversity, they haven't really faced any. What's like the biggest problem the Celtics have dealt with this year? Like Porzingis missed some time, but nothing that anybody was overly concerned about. There was never like a stretch in the season where the Celtics, hey, it's not going well for you guys, right? I mean, think back to how many times they lose back-to-back games. Really early on, Philly and Minnesota, they come out of that, they go on a winning streak. They had like the two Atlanta games at the end of the season, but those were weird because everybody wasn't playing. So they haven't really been in a lot of adverse situations. They are used to playing from in front. And the biggest disappointing thing about that game the other night is they're up by three at halftime and they just let go of the rope. It felt like they felt like, hey, if Miami's going to do this in the first half, there's no way they're going to shoot this well in the second half. And part of that, as we alluded to earlier, is game plan, and the game plan that they put into place, to me, it's just not effective. They had to figure out a way to change that up. But I do agree with you. There needs to be that moment. Now, maybe that was game six against Philly last year where Tatum hit the big shots. Like, there has been moments of it. But here's the thing. I would ask you this. Do you feel confident that it's going to happen when they fall behind? Because I don't. I don't feel like confident when they fall behind in these games that they're going to come back. And I do think that is an issue. All right. Who's up next?
Holy shit, Brian. Leave it to the Seas to take their foot off the gas pedal. I'll tell you, it's just like, oh, it's maddening sometimes. It's like that analogy, like that golfer who misses that 2 or 3 foot putt. And all of a sudden realizes you can't take it for granted. You got to bear down and, you know, don't take your foot off the gas pedal. Because, say, Miami Heat, they're pros also. They're getting a paycheck. They're coming to play. And if you just, you know, if you start to get too, I don't know, nonchalant, I don't know if it'd be the right word, but the Seas just took their foot off the gas pedal and let Miami come through the door. But anyways, I hope it's a wake-up call and enough of this bullshit and get back on it. All right, Brian. I retired. You know, Jamie knows you guys. I retired as a postman, but I came to work part time at this Rocky Gap Casino Resort golf course, and I'm working on the golf course here. And if you guys are ever in Flintstone, Maryland, it's a Jack Nicklaus designed course. It's a beautiful golf course. Stop on in. All right, guys. Talk to you later. Bye bye.
All right, Joe. We'll definitely come by, man. We'll definitely come by if we're ever in the area. I appreciate it, man. Great stuff. By the way, if you want to leave us a voicemail, 617-396-7172. I love Fired Up Joe there because I felt the same way. After the game, you guys heard me through the night. I was pissed off too. I agree with Joe. I'm sick of the bullshit. It was definitely a concerning loss. And man, it was just a really tough pill to swallow. And I love the fact that we at least got this draft tonight as we're recording. It's still technically Thursday as we're recording. Most of you, of course, will hear this on Friday, but it's 11:30 at night. I'm super fired up about the draft, Drake May, but I feel like there was leftover things from the Celtics that we had to get to. And I know a lot of you guys are aggravated about that. And that was one of those games where, look, I don't want to overreact to one game, but it's just, we've seen this so many times with the Celtics in the past where they lose games like this. One other thing that I would say concerned me about that game the other night, I alluded to the fact that I thought Tatum played well in that game for the most part. How about this? Tatum was on the court for 41 minutes. The Celtics outscored Miami by 6 points. They had a 118.8 offensive rating. Tatum sat for 7 minutes. The Celtics were 3 of 12 from the floor, 25%. They were outscored by 16 points. They had a 33.3 offensive rating. Not a 93.3, which would be atrocious. Not an 83.3 that would be atrocious. 33.3 offensive rating. And here's the thing. It's like, I understand, small sample, but the point is, the Celtics, for the first time in the Tatum era, have been good in the non-Tatum minutes. So after I put this on social media, on Twitter today, and then Sean Grandy, of course, the great play-by-play voice of the Celtics, retweeted my tweet, quote tweeted, I should say. So if you look from 2017 through 2023, Grandy put this out there. Tatum on the court, the Celtics outscored their opponent by 2,505 points. That's the equivalent of a 67-win team. With Tatum off the court, they were outscored by 156 points. That's the equivalent of a 39-win team. Okay, how about the 2023-2024 Celtics? It changed. The Celtics had outscored teams by 608 points with Tatum on the court, the equivalent of a 67-win team. Tatum off the court, they outscored their opponent by 322 points, the equivalent of a 64-win team. So that's what was so strange about this, that the Celtics actually lost it, were just so bad in the non-Tatum minutes because it felt like they fixed that issue this season. One thing I will say about the non-Tatum minutes, when Tatum's off the court, I don't think, and look, I thought Drew, and I know I talked a lot about Porzingis the other day, like Porzingis in that game, they're switching. Porzingis is going to be able to score on those guys. Against Bam, 1 of 1. Against Hero, 0 of 4. Against Hakez, 0 of 2. Against Jovic, 0 of 1. Martin, 0 of 1. But Hero, 0 of 4. How are you 0 of 4 when it's Tyler Hero, right? Like, and I expect that Porzingis is going to be better. I do, because Porzingis has been so good for this team all season long that I expect he's going to be better going forward, right? So that should be something that irons itself out. But Drew was also bad in that game, right? And one of the things I was thinking about, Peyton Pritchard only played 20 minutes and Drew played 37. I don't think at this point, and look, I love Drew as a player. This is not meant to be taking shots at Drew. It's more about complimenting Pritchard. Pritchard was so good down the stretch of the season, and I felt that was one of the only good things about the end of the regular season, like watching Pritchard, right? Because Pritchard was going nuts. He was playing some of the best basketball of his career. And I think that you can be closer with that gap. I don't think that Drew should be playing in a lot of these games more than 35 minutes. He's older at this particular point in time. When you're fatigued, you tend to make more mistakes. We've seen him this season at the end of games get beat at the end on offensive rebounds because he's fatigued. And I do think that Pritchard brings a particular skill set onto the court when he plays, which is pushing the basketball. He didn't even take a shot in that game the other night. So when Tatum rests, what I would like them to do is have Drew out of the game as well, because Drew, like Tatum, tends to play slow, right? Drew isn't a guy that likes to get up and down and transition. I want it to be Jaylen Brown with Derek White and Peyton Pritchard. And you can figure the other two guys out. If you want to throw Hauser out there too, get some shooting, fine. But one of the bigs, Porzingis out, whoever it is. I'm just talking about those three guys. I want Drew and Tatum off the court together. And I want those three guys on the court together because they can then get some easy baskets. The Celtics were not pushing the ball like we've seen at times, or they can have their... a very efficient team in transition. They just don't push the ball a lot. Those three guys are the best transition players for the Celtics in terms of they like to get out and run. Now, Tatum's obviously great in transition when he does it, but he likes to play slower, right? So that's one thing that I would look at. And White is incredible with the hit-ahead passes. Pritchard is going to get out on the break like crazy. And Jaylen Brown, post-All-Star break, was averaging the most points per game in terms of fast break points. So that's something I would like to see from the Celtics is when Tatum goes to the bench, throw Drew on the bench too, and have it be Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, and Jaylen Brown, because those guys can speed up the game. And one real small note on Tatum, because I thought he was outstanding. One thing that does aggravate me is because the Heat are playing the switching scheme, and really all the defenders Tatum is going against, because there is no Jimmy Butler, he's going to have a mismatch. They got to go quicker. He's got to go quicker. Sometimes he just takes too long, and that allows the defense behind you to get set up for when they want to help and all that stuff. Just go quicker when you do that. And one other note in terms of on the other side of the ball, I would say this is, I don't believe, and look, I don't think this surprises many of you, that Porzingis is a great matchup for Bam on the other end of the court, right? So the thing that I would say is, I would contemplate throwing Jaylen on him, because Jalen, when he locks into a certain defender or a certain offensive player, he's outstanding. We've seen it happen last postseason with James Harden, right? He locked onto James Harden. He was out. We've seen it at points this season where he's taken on certain matchups, like taking on Steph Curry. We complimented Jalen on this at the end of the season. I would try to hide Porzingis on a guy that you don't deem a great shooter, although let's not give up all the open threes like we've been talking about. But I would try somebody else on Bam because Bam was awesome in that game, and I don't feel like Porzingis has much of a chance covering Bam. All right, let's bring in producer extraordinaire Jamie McClellan. Jamie, what's going on, man? How are you? Did you order the Drake May Patriots jersey yet? Did you order the Drake May North Carolina jersey yet? I know you were waiting on the North Carolina. Where are we at?
I am boycotting Patriots jerseys, I think, until they change their uniforms. There's only so many of the retro red jerseys I can have hanging around my room. But in terms of the UNC, I'm torn, Brian. I don't know whether to go with the light blue or the white. I think they both look really clean. I've ruled out the navy alternates, though. So it's down to the whites or the blues. What do you think? What do you prefer?
I would probably go with the blue. But I'm with you, man. The white are good, too. The helmets are sweet. But I wouldn't get this one just because the baby blue or the Carolina blue, as they call it, and the white are like their main colors. I actually do like the navy one. I think the navy one looks pretty good when they have the white pants and the white helmet. But if I had
pants and the white helmet, though, Brian. I know, get the jersey.
Well, you're not just going to walk around with a whole uniform.
I could.
But yeah, I would go with the blue. I would go with the blue. The blue is, and it's Jordan brand too, man, which is sick. Cool.
I know. I do like especially the navy piping around the letters. I think it looks really fresh, so I'm down.
I haven't seen if he's signed on with anybody yet, but I hope it's Jordan brand. That would be cool if he's a Jordan brand athlete.
I mean, stick in the family. You got to think that they would. But I haven't heard that either in terms of any endorsements or not.
Yeah, you got to get the blue one, man. But hey, man, the prices are probably going up on those now.
Speaking of fashion, Brian, what do you make of Belichick's outfit? I was digging the pink.
Bill looks good, man. I couldn't believe it when that show first started because obviously McAfee shows a little bit different. And they had one guy on there that was like being Kuiper the whole time. He was like a fake Mel Kuiper. Did you hear that guy?
Okay, it took me a minute. Oh. I'm like, what is he doing? Is he literally pretending to be Mel Kuiper? And I think he was, right?
Yeah, the whole show. So Bill was arguing with, I don't know the guy's name off the top of my head, but Bill was arguing with that guy that Bill doesn't like the term edge rusher.
That sounds not like a fan of edge rusher.
Bill's like, he's a defensive end. He's like, is he a three technique? Bill was really upset about that.
I thought he was good overall, Bill, like super illuminating. I don't know. I really enjoyed his presence. I'm sure like everyone, like I love those breakdowns after every pick where he went through. I thought it was good because they weren't like sometimes you get these the pick is in and Mel Kiper and people like that, like, oh my gosh, this guy's gonna be the next best player. But I thought it was more balanced, you know, like they talked about their flaws a lot, and it was like, if he fixes these flaws, he'll be good. And if he doesn't fix these flaws, he'll be a flop, which I thought was kind of a more interesting way to think about these things.
Yeah, Bill was awesome, man. But yeah. Bill should have been, look, and I understand that they put him on this show. It's weird to me that he was on that show just because it's like a weird combination, but it ended up like Bill was really good. You know what I mean? Like, I thought that Bill should have been on the main ESPN broadcast because he was awesome, man. Like, and he was fair, right? Like, I know I gave the quotes about Drake May, but he talked about, like, every single quarterback, he went through stuff he liked and stuff he didn't like. And the thing I liked about it, it wasn't like, hey, here's all the stuff I don't like and here's all the stuff I do like. He was going through the game tape and being like, see, this is good. This is bad. At one point, like the first guy, Caleb Williams, of course, he was talking about, he's like, just get this out. He's like, you threw it, then you wait, you throw it to the running back. He gets hammered 2 yards later. Like, what's get the ball out. Like, I like that. It's like, Bill's watching it. He's obviously already watched the film, right? Because he was planning on showing all this stuff on the broadcast. He's getting worked up again after he's already seen it. And these are not his players, right? It's not like, hey, he's going into, like, remember we talked about the fact that he used to get on Brady, right? And Brady, remember the players in the documentary were saying how shocked they were that he got on Brady so hard? And he was correcting his own team's mistakes, right? These are guys that he has no allegiance to, and he's not coaching them. And he's still mad about what's going on, which I absolutely love.
No, I mean, he likes good football, and he hates bad football. My favorite was they showed Jaden Daniels holding the ball with one hand, and then he fumbled, and he looks so disgusted. It's just terrible ball security. You know that bothers him. But my one thought, Brian, I hate to bring it back to this, but he's going through all of these quarterback tapes. Like, oh, that's a great decision. Like, great timing, great pre-snap read, et cetera. And I'm like, how did you move on from Tom Brady? Like, how do you watch the tape on Tom Brady and you're like, eh, I think I'm going to go with a rookie. Like, you know what I mean? Like, how? Like, I just don't understand why, how you watch Tom Brady's tape and it doesn't show you all of those things in spades.
Yeah, I think that was more of, honestly, like an age thing, a personal situation. Because remember, I mean, we got into like the whole thing going on with Guerrero at that point in time. Sure. Like, there was a lot of stuff that was going on at that point in time, right? So, I just think there was a lot of different elements to it, right? And Bill, look, obviously, he's the greatest coach of all time. He probably thought he could make it work with another quarterback.
Yeah. But it's just like you watch all these rookie prospects and you just see a million things they don't do well. And you have this guy that did it all. I agree, though. I mean,
well, and that's why now, like, the more and more you think about it, that's why he was infatuated with Garoppolo, right? Because he gets rid of the ball. Now, Garoppolo turned into a guy that turns the ball over too much. Mm-hmm. But Garoppolo is a guy that just gets the ball out quick, right? Like, that was like his big, that's why he went in the second round, because he has like this unreal release. Yep. That was the biggest strength that Garoppolo had. So you can see sort of why Bill would have been attracted to a guy like Jimmy Garoppolo in terms of what he could do on the field. But I thought Bill's going to be awesome on TV. I really do. Like that, I thought that was awesome. Now,
it was awesome.
The one thing I'm interested in is like, McAfee does like a lot of hosting, obviously, right? He hosts a show on a daily basis.
Yeah.
I do like, I like the Manning cast. I like watching it, but sometimes you wonder like, hey, could it be like a little bit more structured? You know what I mean? Like at times, because I do like it. And I like when Peyton's like breaking down things, but it's just like, and Bill, I think Bill will be like sort of, obviously they've had entertaining guests. They've had celebrities, they've had comedians and all that. They've had Tom Brady's been on there, right? They have a lot of players in the league. Josh Allen's been on there. Pat Mahomes has been on there. So Bill will be like easy in terms of like, he's going to be talking about what's actually going down in the field. But I just feel like sometimes some of the guests, and I don't want to point out certain people, but I feel like some of the guests, they don't really bring much to the table, right? You know what I mean? It's like, oh, this celebrity is a fan of this team. Let's bring this guy on. And I'm like, I'm not really gaining much from this. I much rather just be watching Peyton and Eli talk about football. And if you bring on a former, like when they bring in the current NFL guys, I think most of those guys are pretty good. Like, especially when it's like a quarterback, Josh Allen will be like, oh yeah, this is what he's doing here. Or like, they'll talk about their team and they'll talk about stuff like that. That stuff is interesting to me. But when they just have these random people on there, I'm like, I don't really care about this. Right. Or like, I don't really care about some of this, like, and no offense to the celebrities, but there's a lot of stuff that I don't care about that they're talking about when they're on the show. I like the football aspect of it. But anyway, I think Bill will be good, that because they're going to be talking about what's going on in the field. So I think it actually will be good with Bill. And I will say this too. I thought Saban was good. I watched some of the, they had like a college game day preview to the draft. Saban was good. I thought he was the best analyst on there. Like, and they had all the guys from game day. They had, who was on there? Herb Street, Galloway, Desmond Howard, a bunch of guys from game day, right? And I felt like Saban was the best guy. Like, I know that he's played against a lot of guys and all that, but I thought he was by far the best guy. I mean, Galloway, for some reason, had a quarterback going number four. He thought a quarterback was going number four, even though Marvin Harrison was there. But anyway, like, I get it. They're all doing bold predictions at that point in time. But I thought Saban was really good. So I'm interested to see, like, Saban and Bill interacting on some of this stuff. So
I think it's only April, though, Brian. My bold predictions. I think they're going to change his role from now until when football season's next year. It's like, this is almost like a tryout. And it's like, you mentioned like the celebrities coming on the Manning cast and how it's kind of unnecessary. It felt like on the panel today, there was like three guys that were pretty unnecessary. Like when Bill, he just like, he sucks up so much gravity. I just think everyone stops and listens to him. I don't see how you can have him, like, even with Peyton and Eli, like, I feel like that's too many voices. Like, I think they weren't sure what they're going to get with Bill. And I think today he like aced his test. And I just feel like before long, you know, he's going to be able to command his own show almost. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, this is what I'll say is like, he gets mad about things that are genuine to him. Like, it's not fake. Like, he's legitimately getting pissed at these things, right? And I think about somebody that's been on TV forever now, Rex Ryan. Bill's already better than him. And this isn't me because I dislike Rex Ryan. It's just Rex Ryan is a hot take artist now. He's been in the media so long that it's, you know, it's kind of like Kendrick Perkins, where Perk's not even like a former NBA player at this point. Perkins is just, I'm going to throw out these crazy ass hot takes. That's what it's turned into, right? And Rex Ryan is that way now. The guy's completely out to lunch with some of the stuff that he says. Bill is already better than Rex Ryan. And Bill, like, he doesn't have to fake any of the emotion. Like, this stuff, like these, like you talked about Jaden Daniels, the ball security. That shit literally pisses Bill off. Yeah. Like, you can tell in his face. He is irate watching that, right? Like, incredibly aggravated with that type of stuff. I mean, he was going through some of the ball placement on some of the throws in the red zone with Jaden Daniels that he was pissed off about, too. He's like, look at this. You got Malik Nabers. You don't even give him a chance. Like, that type of stuff. So I really do think that he's going to be awesome on TV. We'll see how long he stays in TV because, as we've alluded to, he wants to coach again. But, and I know a lot of people probably didn't. Now, maybe people here locally did. A lot of people didn't watch the alternate broadcast, if you will. Most people watch just like the regular, either the NFL Network or the regular ESPN one. And I would say if they did, like if you did watch the McAfee thing with Bill, I think most people would come across thinking that Bill was awesome. Like, I think Bill was a star of the draft. And I can't, I can guarantee you, I know like who was on ESPN. I know who's on the NFL Network. No offense to those guys. Bill was the best guy. He was the best guy. And I was like, I had both TVs on. So I did have the Knicks on for a while, them in Philly. Embiid went for 50.
Yep.
But I was going back and forth because like one of my TVs is obviously on, one of them is streaming. So it's like kind of behind, you know what I mean? Like one TV is.
One's on the cable and one's on the streaming.
So the pick was coming in on the bottom screen before the top screen where I had Bill. Mm-hmm. So I would sometimes click on that and it'd be like Booger McFarlane break. And like, I like Booger McFarlane, but it's like Booger McFarlane, Mel Kiper, all these guys that
you've heard it all before.
Yeah, they've been on the draft before. Bill, and look, maybe part of it is just I'm biased because it's Bill and it's new to us, right? But I thought Bill was awesome.
I think I just think he's already one of the bigger stars when they're NFL broadcast. I just can't believe they're going to have him relegated to ESPN Plus. And not that that's not a big deal, having Peyton Manning. I mean, he's probably their other biggest star. Just it feels like before long, he's got to be that one's, on the A-team. One,
that is on ESPN, though. That's on ESPN, too. That's not just on ESPN cast. Plus. Yeah, the Manning cast is on ESPN too. It's not just on ESPN Plus. So at least you'll have that element to it.
Well, we need him on cable one way or the other. But I'm glad. And I dug the pocket square. That was about the most ornate pocket square I've ever seen in my life. Like a flamingo he stuffed in there or something.
No, Bill's a sharp dresser when he's not dressing for a football game.
It's true. I mean? He wore a fair amount of suits, actually, to post-game pressers and stuff like that.
Yeah, he wears, like, good suits. It's just, like, when he's, you know, when he's on the sidelines, which I kind of respect. I never understood the fact that, and I know some coaches, I don't think actually any NBA coaches do it anymore. College coaches do. Some college coaches still do. But really, it changed during COVID, where it used to be all these NBA coaches would wear suits and whatnot. And then it changed to, like, just wearing, like, you know, Missoula's wearing, like, the, you know, those little... It's not even a quarter zip with Missoula. He wears just like the long sleeve t-shirt type thing. And all the coaching all the coaching staffs wear the same thing. I've never understood why coaches wear suits. It's just weird to me. Especially when the like
it looks great though, Ryan. Come on. It looks stupid when they're on the ice, Montgomery, fine. I thought he looked classy on the basketball court. It's like Pat Riley, you know, the slick back hair. You like you watch that TV show, Showtime.
Yeah, I mean, look, I like wearing suits and whatnot, but I never understood why coaches have to wear them. It's like they're going to be sweating like crazy. Why would you be wearing a suit? You know what I mean?
They get paid millions of dollars. They can wear a suit if it makes me happy.
All right, Jamie, before we go, you relieved that Drake is finally a Patriot?
I am super relieved. More than anything, we'll see if it's the right decision, but I'm just glad that we can like start the clock on the rebuild. Like if they had traded out, it's just like another lost year. And then they draft someone, a quarterback maybe, and then it's another year. So I'm just glad we can get to business and see if we got the right guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Elliot Wolf was asked about like all the stuff that was going around, like all the rumors, if you will, and he was basically saying a lot of it was BS.
I saw what Rappaport said today that the Giants and Vikings, I mean, they made a strong effort, quote unquote. Who knows what that means exactly? Maybe it wasn't that strong.
Yeah. Well, and like... The reporting that we got, what was it, on Wednesday? I may have talked about this with Fitzy, like Chad Grass reporting that it would be very unlikely that the Patriots would trade out of there. Like Drake May's been their guy. Mm-hmm. So, hey, if you have the guy, it's not worth trading out. You know what I mean? Because then you're still looking for the guy.
Totally.
So just draft the guy when you have a chance to draft the guy. So I'm pumped, man. I'm
fired. It's going to be interesting to see. We got six quarterbacks, Brian, in the top 12. It's going to be fun to watch them, see who's the real deal and who's not.
Crazy. I'll be honest. I was surprised by the Knicks thing. And I know, obviously, Sean Payton, by the way, was on that show with Bill. And they were going back. He was rattling off a bunch of stats. I've never been a Knicks guy. I mean, he's old. He is very old, okay?
Yeah.
But he's rattling off all this stuff about him. Like, 2-minute drill, he's the most accurate. Like, he's like, we had them take out all like the bubble screens and like the system throws, if you will, in the Oregon offense. And he was number one in that. I'm like, hold on. Is he actually good? Like, this is Sean Payton, right? Quarterback guru. I'm like, wait, hold on. Was I wrong about Bo Nix? But like, when you're Sean Payton, you're probably at the point where you think like, whatever I do, it's going to work, right? I'm Sean Payton. You know what I mean? Like, I'm the quarterback guru. So it was just funny.
Make it work with Russell Wilson, though.
It was just funny, though, to me, because I find myself sitting there. I'm like, because it was Sean Payton, I'm like, holy shit, wait, hold on. I interviewed Sean Payton 1 year at Radio Row. Nice guy. Yeah, he's a good guy.
He looks intense. I'm surprised to hear that he's a nice guy, but I'm glad to hear
it. Well, you know why? Because, like, the first question I asked him, it was, we were at Radio Row.
Yeah, so what happened with Bountygate?
I didn't ask about that. This is, like, years after that, so.
Yeah.
It was Super Bowl week, obviously, because we're on Radio Row. It's when the Patriots were playing the Falcons.
Oh, yeah.
And I asked him, because like we were talking about like the guy that I was working with at the time, former NFL quarterback Sean Salisbury, I used to do a show with him. Sean used to be on ESPN, too. He's doing radio in Houston now. But we were talking about, he introduced some Super Bowl winning coach and then whatever, like, because everybody at Radio Row is like pumping some sort of product. I forget what he was pumping, but actually, you know who was there? Complete digression. Tebow, he was just pumping avocados. He had a sleeveless hoodie on. He's walking around Radio with a sleeveless hoodie. I took a picture with him. I should show you the picture.
Oh, yeah.
He was so jacked. But anyway, so we're talking about the Super Bowl, and I, of course, brought up the onside kick. And, like, he went into the whole story.
A thing of the past now, Brian, with the new rules.
Right. He was talking about how they can't, like, why they did it, how they knew it was going to work. Because, really, it's one of the ballsiest plays in Super Bowl history. Like, what if it doesn't work? You're porked, right?
It was the ballsiest thing ever. That was such a memorable game in my mind, especially as Patriots fans. Like, one of my favorite non-Patriots moments was the Saints beating the Colts that year. Who was it? Like, Tracy Porter caught that pick six to end the game against Manning? I was pumped.
Yeah, and then he played with Manning in Denver.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Reggie Bush was on that team.
Just got his Heisman back.
Yeah, I remember because Reggie Bush got $500,000 for them making it to the NFC Championship game and then another $500,000 for making it to the Super Bowl. Or, excuse me, winning the NFC Championship and then winning the Super Bowl.
It's a good payday.
Nice 11. Man. Yeah, nice 11. All right, Jamie, I don't know why I'm talking about Reggie Bush. He did get his Heisman back. I don't know why I'm talking about Sean Payton, because he was on with Bill, the Bo Nix thing. That's how we got to this point. But it's 11:53 right now. We'll call it a night.
Day one, Brian, of the Drake May era. I'm excited.
Oh, by the way, special podcast. We'll be recording on Saturday this weekend because the B's at 8 and we have the C's at 6. Let's go. All right. And by the way, if you want to leave us a voicemail, 617-396-7172. If you have a reaction to the draft, because by Saturday, we'll have almost the entire draft done. Anyway, we'll have a lot of draft picks by that point in time for the Patriots. So make sure to get your voicemails in on that. Or if you want to react to the B's or the Celts, certainly welcome to do so. Okay. If you want to leave that voicemail, 617-396-7172. You can also email us offthepike@gmail.com. Thanks to Jamie McClellan and Steve Cerruti for producing this podcast. And we'll talk to you coming up on Saturday night. Must be 21 plus, 18 plus in D.C. and present in select states. FanDuel is offering online sports wagering in Kansas under an agreement with Kansas Star Casino, LLC. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG in Colorado, D.C., Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, North Carolina, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Kentucky, Tennessee, Virginia, and Vermont.
Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona, 1-888-789-7777, or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut, 1-800-9-WITH-IT in Indiana, 1-800-522-4700, or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas, 1-877-770-STOP in Louisiana. Visit mdgamblinghelp.org in Maryland, visit 1800gambler.net in West Virginia, or call 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming. Hope is here. Visit gamblinghelplinema.org or call 800-327-5050 for 24/7 support in Massachusetts. Call 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY in New York.